I'm sitting here with my Juicero, enjoying a Quibi.
Soylent for lunch.
Yeah. I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
So it's Tomash, like an SH at the end. And the last name is Tunguz. So a little tough.
For the longest time, Tomash Tunguz's LinkedIn said he was working on something new, but he never specified what. We now know what that something new is. A new venture firm.
Yeah, it's a venture firm called Theory, and we were really lucky we raised about $230 million in order to raise to invest in early stage software companies.
$230 million raised from limited partners or LPs is of course a lot of money, even by Silicon Valley standards, especially when you consider at this point Tomash is the first and only member of the firm.
You were able to raise that from investors even when you said, I'm going to go out on my own.
I was very lucky, yeah. So we were able to put together an institutional LP base, predominantly U.S. investors, and really proud of that LP base. I feel very, very fortunate considering the macro.
Now, you raised the fund before the world got crazy, right? I mean, before Silicon Valley Bank and everything.
So the fund was closed. The documents were signed. Our first capital call, which is when we ask for money from our investors, was supposed to be executed the week that SVB died. And so actually the hardest part of the last 5 to 6 weeks has been getting a bank account. It's really unusual. A lot of the big banks like JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley and Bank of America and Citi, we were refused.
You have $230 million to deposit.
We are an unappealing customer. For some reason, I can't figure out. So we're almost there. I finally figured out where to get a bank account. But that's been actually really hard. It's like surprisingly hard.
So the LPs at this point are holding on to the money.
They're holding on to the money.
They're committed.
They're committed.
In tranches.
And it's just about finding the right banking partner, because with all the destabilization in banks, we want to make sure that our banking partner is solid.
Now, you know, having never, and I realize it's not the full 230 right away, but having never deposited $230 million in the bank, who would have an issue with that? I would have to think if you went up to, I mean, you don't go up to a teller. I understand that. But if I went up to a teller, you know, she'd take the rest of the day off. I mean,
yeah. Well, it comes in pieces, right? Okay, so yeah, it doesn't come in 230 at once. But I've been trying to understand. I mean, they have a lot of the major banks said we have an assets under management minimum threshold. And they said it's $1.5 to $3 billion for us to take your business. And I don't really, you would think the number of LPs, limited partners, investors in our fund, each one of those is a wire, you know, wire. And then when we invest in companies, there's a wire and we need
to. They say come back to us when you have $1 billion?
In AUM, yeah. Yeah. So, it's at a particular level of scale, I must look so small. I mean, we look at that number and we say $230 million is a lot of money. But if you're JP Morgan,
yeah,
I don't know how many trillions of dollars you manage. I mean, I'm not even a basis point.
And I'll go back and re-record this if there turns out to be a San Jose National Bank, because I don't want to slander anybody. But I assume San Jose National Bank for you is too small, my imaginary bank, too small to trust to put that much money in.
Well, it's So you have,
because surely they'd take it, right?
For sure. So there are national banks and then there are regional banks.
Yeah.
And what Silicon Valley Bank, the crisis that they catalyzed, yes, created a lot of questions around the counterparty risk of those regional banks. And so I'm sure there are many very healthy regional banks. The ideal situation is to have a national level bank as your primary banking partner.
You don't want to put your money in a regional bank.
Well,
I mean, I get it. It's fiscally responsible.
I'm not in the business of evaluating a bank balance sheet. I don't think any of us expected to be in that business.
No.
Right? And so I just don't want to misunderstand whether somebody's assets and liabilities are mismatched for whatever the construct is of their bank.
That was an what a strange answer. You said you've got this solved or you're close, right?
It's all very close. We should have account numbers on Monday. Five weeks later.
When you do have an account and when you do start writing checks, presuming they give you checks, you're going to write big ones, right?
Yeah, so it's somewhere between 1 to 25. And the way to think about it is we really want to... So we're entering a capital markets environment that's a lot different than the last 10 years. In the last 10 years, unabated bull market for 11 years, 12 years, which was the single longest bull market run in U.S. history. And the next 10 years won't look like that. And who knows what they will look like, but I can assure you they won't look like that. So we really wanted to be a financial partner that had a lot of stability. And so the idea is to invest either at the seed or the A and then continue to invest material amounts of money behind those companies.
Now, you know, those are big seed investments. I mean, seed investments used to be much smaller.
They used to be.
Yeah.
Inflation happens quick. No, there's a lot more competition in the market. I mean, the U.S. venture capital industry has grown from about $8 to $320 billion in about 12 years. And so there's more money. And that's a big driver of round sizes. And then the very competitive financings also tend to be larger.
As far as the entrepreneurs, are they realistic as far as term sheets, as far as, I mean, it's a strange, strange time.
So most of the market has corrected. So the public markets are down 70% from their highs. And the Series A and the Series B market on the whole are probably down 30 to 40%. And you would expect some disconnect between the publics and the privates. There is one segment that is partying as if it's 2021. Which is the generative AI segment.
No, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And that segment, so like in the heyday of venture capital, we were investing in companies at 100, 200, 300, 500, 600, 700 times their ARR, their annual recurring revenue. And, you know, now the public market is kind of trading at like 6 to 7, just to kind of put in perspective, 100x difference. And in generative AI, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, there are 3 companies that I know of that have traded between 5 to 700 times ARR.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You were managing director at Redpoint.
I was.
What's your relationship with that firm now?
It's great. I was just on the phone with one of my former colleagues, and it's been... We look forward to working together on a bunch of different investments. Obviously, you have a lot of kinship there.
You know, I'm sure everyone has mixed feelings about, you know, moving off, even if it is to open your own shop. Were you confident that that was the right decision?
I'm very happy I made that decision. I had a wonderful run, and 15 years is a good long time to work with a wonderful group of people. And now it's time for the next adventure.
Erica Brescia moved into your role. I've interviewed her in the past.
She's great.
She really is, isn't she?
She's a wonderful person.
I'll pause here for a brief clip of an earlier Sand Hill Road interview with Erica Brescia, who replaced Tomasz at Redpoint.
different venture capitalists have different like superpowers, or at least we hope they're superpowers. And I think one of mine is connecting with people, building relationships, and judging talent, quite frankly.
She's a wonderful person. You know, her experience as a COO of GitHub, I think it's a unique set of skills, and she's warm and friendly.
You should hire her. Yeah.
I think she's got a gig.
When you were there, you took Looker from a startup to a sale to Google for $2.6 billion. I mean, it sounds simplistic to say, what lesson did you learn? Because that, there's a lot of lessons in there. But what did you take away from that?
Yeah, that was a really wonderful experience. There was the founder there, Lloyd, took a bet on me. There was this blog post that I think Finn Barnes wrote that asked, like, who took a bet on you in your career? And Lloyd took a bet on me. The big lesson there was going back to this idea of innovation equals invention plus distribution. I learned that lesson again there. So in 2012, cloud was growing really fast. The fastest growing cloud product was Redshift, which was a database. And the dominant BI vendor at the time was Tableau. And Tableau had been architected out of Stanford for smaller data sets to make them look beautiful, but couldn't really handle the scale. And so Lloyd and the Looker team had built a technology that was cloud native that allowed them to process cloud levels, cloud size data. And that architecture allowed, so that was the innovation. The core innovation is this technology called LookML that allows you to work with large scale data. And the business, the go-to-market advantage that created was we could partner with Snowflake, we could partner with Google's BigQuery, we could partner with other cloud databases. And the combination of those two, that partnering strategy, drove a huge amount of growth. And that's how we became the biggest in the category.
Who have you taken a risk on? I mean, obviously as a venture capitalist,
yeah,
I suppose,
good question.
Lots of them, but who would say that about you?
Well, I've been fortunate to work with lots of junior investment professionals at Redpoint. And it's been a privilege to help coach and guide them. And many of them now are in wonderful places, either running their own firms or senior partners at other firms. So I think, you know, I like to think that may be the case.
Now, you mentioned a blog. You run a very popular blog and write for it a lot. There were 10 entries last month alone. What motivates you to want the world to know what's in your head?
Boy, that is a good question. I guess the way I approach it is, okay, so the more founders I meet, the more I realize there are many different ways of building a startup. And the privilege of my job is that I get to watch that. And I get to ask them questions about, okay, why did you do it this way and not that way? And the perspective that I hope that I've always brought, and I hope that I always bring, is sharing learning. So it's not necessarily my thoughts. It's just, this is what I see in market. This is what makes it interesting. Let's look at some numbers to see, you know, like this, one of the recent ones was around generative AI. Mm-hmm. And I had this question that popped into my head, which was, will the personal computer have had a greater impact on GDP to the US, or will generative AI? And the answer stunned me. So Goldman actually went to answer this question. And they predict, and look, predictions are always very optimistic.
That's all we got.
But they predict something like 1,000, Gen AI will have 1,000x more impact to GDP than the personal computer.
Wow.
And that's awesome. That's incredible. And so now it's like, okay, well, let's go and figure out, what does that mean? What are all the different pieces in order to build a generative AI company? How do you take those new technologies and create go-to-market advantages? And that's what I hope to share on the blog.
I was talking with Chan Tang from Berkeley Skydeck a couple of weeks ago. And he said, the thing that I think most people don't realize is, in some cases, not all, but in some cases, we're not years away from something. We're months away from something. It's moving that quickly.
It is moving that. I mean, there's rumor. I mean, GPT-5 will come out and it will be two orders of magnitude larger in terms of the number of neurons. And this was cool. So there was a paper coming out of Stanford. I mean, just to kind of make this, to ground this a little bit, there's a paper coming out of Stanford that talks about what are called emergent properties of these models. So if you're a human, so I'm a human, I will learn by reading a book, right? I will look at a book and read about the history of Rome, and I will learn about the history of Rome. I can also, so that's one way I learn, basically by memorization. The other way I can learn is swimming. So let's say I wanted to learn how to swim. So I could pick up a book and I could learn all the mechanics about the freestyle, the breaststroke,
but you haven't learned to swim.
You throw me into a pool,
right?
I'm going to drown, right? And so I can only learn by doing. We had thought that most of these generative AI models, their learning was going to be constrained to just the first kind of learning, memorization about Rome. So in the last model, the GPT-4's LSAT score popped, right? And got to 80% of a human, and all the AP exams got to levels of a human. But what we're starting to realize is the more queries, the more questions we feed, the more it's sort of learning as if it were swimming. It's learning by doing and improving. And that's the part that we have no idea how fast that will grow or what the downstream impacts will be. That's, I think, the really exciting part.
And we only know what it's learning when it tells us. I'm not, you know, saying that's suspicious or anything, but it's interesting that, you know, if we built a car engine, you and I, we could measure the horsepower, we could measure the efficiency, the output, that kind of thing. But with AI, we wouldn't necessarily know what it knew.
We don't know. It's impossible to look. Well, it's not possible. I won't say it's impossible. It's not possible yet to look in the brain. And so there are some people that are trying to work on it.
Yeah.
Because basically what we do, imagine you have a big dictionary and the computer reads a dictionary. And then what it does is it, between the dictionary entries, it's trying to find similarity. And so it uses a trigonometry function called a cosine function. So like the two sides of a triangle. And the closer those two sides are together, the more related those are. So that's called a vector. And we store those vectors in a database. And when we ask a question to the computer, it looks up a bunch of stuff in the vector database and says, okay, here are like five or six words. Which are the two vectors that are most similar? Okay, let me do something useful with that. And those vectors they're sort of stored in neurons, in the neurons of the brain. But you can't look at inside of a neuron and say, like, what do you have inside? Because it's a bunch of computer.
Well, much
machine
like
code.
A human, you don't know what I know until you ask.
That's exactly right.
You've been writing since 2012 on that blog. Have you gone back and read anything of your older entries and thought to yourself, man, I was so ahead of my time, or, oh my God, I should totally delete this. What was it? Was it called Quibi? What, remember that video service?
That's right.
Yeah. You don't have a blog entry that says, Quibi's going to be huge. I'm sitting here with my Juicero enjoying a Quibi.
Soylent for lunch.
Yeah. Anything you regret or anything you're like, I'm amazing. I can't believe I figured that out in 2012.
No, I don't think I've ever seen anything that's amazing. I do predictions every year and I grade them and I average about a 60 or 70%.
Oh, that's pretty good.
But, you know, there are definitely blog posts there that in the fullness of time are wrong.
Sure.
But I want to keep them there. Yes. I want to keep them in the public domain because, again, like it's about authenticity. It's about showing like this is learning and
we used to do a consumer television show. It was broadcast in several cities across the world. And the first time, I think it was Motorola, sent me a cell phone that had a 1-megapixel camera in it. I said, I just don't understand the point of having a camera in a phone. Because I could have predicted the camera would have gotten better. I just couldn't think of situations in which you would want to take a picture and then send it to someone other than, I don't know, you're at a garage sale and you send it to your wife like, hey, this dresser looks, what do you think, sort of thing. Absolutely, this is before, this is going to sound insane to anyone who's under 30, but this is before text messaging. And I mean, it was before we communicated everything with everyone.
Yeah.
And it was before we were taking pictures of our food. but it is the number one dumbest thing I've ever said as far as prediction goes.
It's so hard to anticipate these things. I mean, now it's a funny thing to call it a phone because you buy it based on the camera.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
that's the first number they show off.
But there's no way to anticipate.
There was some comedian talking about the least used app on your phone is phone. Tomasz Tungus of Theory Ventures, who hopefully by now has found a bank. Next week on Sandhill Road.
My name is Bipul Sinha, co-founder CEO of Rubrik. My background is I'm an engineer turned venture capitalist turned entrepreneur.
Sandhill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.